Cliff Central. The revolution.
I've got something important to tell you.
CliffCentral.com.
Good afternoon, fuckers.
Yeah, Ramon doesn't like my apparent radio voice. So
you sound like a younger version of John Robbie, for God's sake.
Yeah, don't compare me to that village idiot. Welcome, that's my radio voice, welcome to the Renegade Report. So, good news, we've been renewed forevermore. Well, I'm sure they'll stop us at some point. Surely we'll say something completely offensive. And then they will kill us. The music in the background has been complained about too, so let's kill that. We like it, so it's staying. Well, 50% of us like it, and this isn't a democracy.
I was just about to say that. People think that we need to be balanced and objective. No, bullshit, we're not. We are objectively offensive and truthful, because we use facts and data and evidence and all those other good things.
Yeah, and six shows in, for the record, we were told by some people, which is the reason why we were only going to have six, is because there was a lot of belief the show wouldn't work. We would have very few listeners and be a small fringe. And we are top five, Cliff Central.
Well, top five last week. We'll see after the show where we are. But we won't divulge that yet. Just know that we are doing extremely well. So thank you all, fellow racists and misogynists. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for your support, especially the female misogynists that we have listening. We appreciate your support.
Especially if you're lesbians. We love the lesbians.
Cool. So six good shows. We had some really great guests on. Any comments, Ramon, looking back on it?
Not really. I mean, we chose these guests because they had something interesting to say. They were very interesting, as you know, as you can see from the downloads. And some of them were actually quite prophetic. So if it's, you know, if Fees Must Fall is rising up again and being all fascistic and being, you know, sexual assaulters of
burning lesbian buildings.
Yeah, and sexual assaulting lesbians. You know, just the typical progressive I don't know, march to something or other.
Well, they did rename a building to Solomon Mafungu House instead of Senate House. You know, Senate being very oppressive, those damn Romans.
Yeah, absolutely. Who is Solomon Mafungu?
He was a apartheid activist, although he wasn't that active. From the little I've read on him, he basically dropped out of school. Joined the resistance, became part of Mkhonto we Sizwe, and came back into the country, killed a few people. So he got into a gunfight with the police or the military services or someone like that back in the day. And four civilians were caught in the crossfire.
Right.
And him and some of his conspirators, or whatever you want to call them, were tried and found guilty of murder, and they were hung.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, whatever, and they can rename it to Susie's building. Like, I don't really actually care whatsoever. But yes, anyway, Jonathan, what did you feel about, I guess, being a very conservative man that you are?
so conservative.
A Donald Trump acolyte.
Donald Trump acolyte. How do we get there? Like, how do I become the Donald fucking Trump acolyte on the show? So I'm just the freedom of speech acolyte. There you go. Unless you want to claim it.
Much more than you. You still think hate speech should exist. I don't.
No, I don't think hate speech should exist. I do think there's problem with speech that incites violence, if that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, but I mean, if you tell a crowd, oh, go burn Muslims, and they do, well, those people are culpable for murder. Why? What do the words have to do with anything?
Yeah, so then we might disagree. I mean, maybe you're more of a free speech absolutist, which you've always claimed to be. I think we've had some interesting suggestions. We ran a poll on Twitter. None of you want to discuss racism, as usual, and again, proven by more data, although it is just a small poll, racism is just not really an issue to most people.
No, exactly. That's why we're talking about the impeachment debate of this past week. I thought it was fantastic. The middle class in moral indignation, you know, shouting, clutching their pearls. How can these people, you know, protect their president? Do these morons know anything about the inner workings of the ANC whatsoever?
I think they do. I think people were quite hopeful. I think that they thought just maybe someone would say, well, you know, he's a bad guy and we should probably get rid of him. Maybe that's just too idealistic.
But 86% or whatever it is of the National Executive Council, you know, owe him their jobs. So the moral choice for them was, okay, we will take Zuma out as president, but we'll lose all our jobs. And these people are not employable anywhere else because they're morons, right? Can you imagine Fikile Mbalula? What is he going to be? A mascot for a second entire dealer?
Yeah, well, he can jerk off Floyd Mayweather. He can become, I'm sure someone does that on a daily basis. He can be the fluffer.
Floyd's fluffer.
Yeah.
No, but that's the thing, right? People are going to look out for their own self-interests.
Yeah, look, we said it before. I mean, we've said that, you know, Jacob Zuma surrounded himself with a whole bunch of people who are his supporters. He's put people into positions that they shouldn't be in based on their qualifications or their know-how. But they're there because they support him and they'll defend him to the end, which they've done. It's quite disappointing. I think some people look at it and they go, all right, well, Gwede is saying some things we kind of like, and Derek Hanekom saying some things we kind of like. And there's some senior guys and ladies who are saying the right things. And then when it comes down to the crunch, they won't kind of do the right things.
But if they have a plan, they won't do it in public, right? The ANC is like a closed church. So if the ballot was public, so people will see how they voted. So I'm saying they're going to play their hand in public in Parliament.
There's a counter argument to that, which is if you do play that hand in public, potentially if it ends up going your way, you end up being very powerful. So for example, had a group of say 10 people voted for his impeachment as part of the ANC group, no doubt they would have been fired from Parliament, the next day, and they would have been removed from any kind of high ANC ranks. But it may have created a chain reaction in which the process of Zuma being sort of removed happens, because people then feel brave enough to start kind of stand out. And I think part of that chain reaction has already started happening. We had... what's that chick's name? Zuma says he doesn't know who she is, but she was at the Gupta's house. Fakie Mentor. So, she's not big enough to cause the chain reaction, but after she said things, other people have started to say things. It sort of creates an environment of comfort.
No, come on. The only people actually speaking are the ones who have jobs elsewhere. Trevor Manuel, head of whatever, Investec. You know, who else spoke out? Tito Mboweni, he works for Goldman Sachs. Like, none of these people are beholden to Zuma. So obviously they would be able to talk out or speak out.
Yeah, do you think none of those people want jobs in the ANC or in government? I think Tito Mboweni would love to be our finance minister or even more, you know, our president, our deputy president. I think he has eyes on those kinds of things.
But why would he? He's earning millions a year, being beholden to shareholders who love him a lot. And why would he want to cut his wages in half or by 75% and have all the pressure of the economy on his shoulders?
Well, why would Donald Trump want that? And it's a very simple answer. People like power more than they like money. So that's why these people, I think, they want to be involved. And just getting back to it, I think if a group of people had done it in Parliament, it may have created – I'm not saying it definitely would have, but it may have done enough – to tell people in Parliament, in the inner circle, because those 233 people are essentially the inner circle, as well as the Premier League. It would have done enough to potentially turn people against Zuma, and then, you know, when the next time the NEC meets or something, you may have a different result. That said, we don't have that. Nobody's brave enough. Nobody's going to do it for what you're saying is basically protecting their own skins, which I can't disagree with. So we have Jacob Zuma until, 2019. People are going, well, oh no, now elections are in August, so we'll get rid of him in August. It's a fucking local election, you morons. we don't vote for the national government in August. The absolute worst thing that can happen is that the ANC can lose control of cities and councils and towns. It's and I don't think they would give a shit, frankly. And honestly put, it might not be the end of the world in terms of a government structure, because what you would have then is the opposition, whoever that is, the DA, the EFF most likely, running cities and towns, with the ANC running the national government. And, well, if you can get rid of some of the morons who are in control of things in the ANC and get some of the more intelligent people in that party into certain positions, it might not be a bad setup.
Yeah, but I think the ANC will act quite harshly if they lose a lot of support in the local elections. Because you must remember, the barometer for political parties are elections. You know, court judgments and Twitter and all these people think they're so fucking important. What counts is that percentage at the end of an election. Say the ANC lose 10% overall, they're going to look behind them and say, well, okay, now we really have to do something. That's going to be the barometer. It's not going to be parliament by any means.
And reasonably, do you think they'll lose the 10%, the 5%, or whatever percent? Because if you think about it, firstly, we don't have that many voters in this country. So everyone thinks, oh, 50 million people. Well, a fair number of those are under 18. I don't know what the exact figure is, but it's probably around 10 million. And then of the other group that can vote, there's several. What was the figure I saw the other day? It's
I think 45% of the electorate vote.
Yeah, so you around 20 million people vote somewhere in that region.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
So the ANC pulls in 10, 11 million voters last election, voted for them. Only a million of those, and probably less, about 800,000 are actually ANC members. So they managed to increase their support by a figure of 10 when they go to the elections from the actual membership.
Right.
I would like to believe that they're going to lose support, but I'm just not convinced that they will.
No, they will lose support. It just depends by how much, right? So, I mean, in Nelson Mandela municipality, they won 52%, I believe, last time around.
Yeah, like 51, I think it might have even been. I think they got very close to losing it.
I mean, if they go down to minus 50% and the EFF and DA go in a coalition, they lose that municipality, right? That's why they parachuted Danny Yordan in there. And he's fired like 70 civil servants in 8 months and cancelled all sorts of fraudulent tenders.
And not gone anywhere near Switzerland or the United States.
No, but here's the fucking irony. If the ANC are under pressure, they actually do a pretty good job. But they're not.
Well,
so this election might put them under pressure and force them to do a bloody good job.
It's true. It's true of any political party. So it's what I've always said about South Africa. I don't believe we have a democracy currently. So in the setup of what we have, yes, you can call it a democracy, but it only really becomes a democracy when you have change of power and you're able to change power on a relatively regular basis between parties without violence and without people losing their minds. And the reality is I really couldn't actually care who would take over. But if the ANC gets kicked out for 5 years, so these guys who are pocketing, let's take a member of parliament, they're pocketing close to 2 million rand a year. It's actually more, because if you take their perks and benefits, you know, cars and housing and flights, etc., it's probably double that. It's probably,
oh, yeah, who knows? You know, it's a few million.
3-4 million rand a year to be an MP. And let's remember, they also don't work every day of the week either. They have a long break between sort of November and February.
But they work so hard, they sleep in parliament sometimes, let's just remember.
Yeah, there are some times when they have like long nights, and then you can follow the parliamentarians often on Twitter telling you what a long single night they're having.
In Cubana?
Hey?
At the Cubana.
Oh, yes, of course. Well, you know,
it's a well-known bar,
you've got to have drinks and food, you know, to rule the country. The point is these guys are earning a fortune. You suddenly have a situation where you have a change in government and they lose their jobs. That's the only thing that's going to incentivize them to come back. And I would argue that if the ANC, say, loses the 2019 elections, which they won't, but if they did, if they lost 2019, and argument's sake, let's just take the DA because they're the current sort of majority, next majority vote holder. If they took over for 5 years, and after 5 years, 2024, people voted the ANC back in, you can better believe that that ANC would be a far, far better organization and would run the country a lot better than they are currently.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We don't need the ANC to lose. We just need the ANC to not have a majority. So if they are under 50% of the national vote, that is the best option to have at this moment.
I agree. So that's the other point about democracy, which is that any one party running parliament is probably not the ideal situation. You know, we want to have all people being able to vote independently of their party. Well, shock, horror.
Well, yeah, but I mean, we already spoke about why they're not doing that. But, yeah, I mean, the ANC is not going to lose anytime soon. I mean, the prediction is probably late 2020s. They might go under 50%.
2029, I think.
Without, if they don't change anything, probably a bit sooner. But, I mean, in the end, it's the other political parties who are facing like one of the worst periods in the ANC's history, and yet they failed to capitalize on this for reasons I cannot really fathom.
How would they capitalize, though? I mean, what haven't they done?
Well, how about stop attacking bloody Zuma all the time? Because Zuma is just one element. Why not talk about... So everyone talks about the general auditor, and he found 30 billion rand unaccounted for. Okay, great. That's 0.3% of the fucking budget. What's happening to the other 99.7%? And we're still in the shit. Why is no one talking about that? Why is no one talking about breaking unions? Why is no one talking about relaxing labor legislation? No one has any ideas. All they ever do is Zuptima's fall and hashtags and bullshit and whatever, filibustering in parliament. But there's no real, you know, policies on the table to say, this is what we're doing differently for the ANC.
And it's quite interesting because the ANC does have some good policies. If you read the actual wording of a lot of their policies, the election manifestos, the National Development Plan, which I honestly haven't read a lot of, but I know parts of it, there are good ideas. There are intelligent people who've put good ideas down onto paper. And if you implemented those things as they are written down, you probably would have relatively decent outcomes.
Whoa. Never, ever, ever. Mistake intention with consequence.
Okay, but you have to have an idea. You have to have an idea which you assume to be good to start off with to go anywhere.
And here's a fucking idea. How about you stop doing so much, let people do what they need to do, and you just take a basic tax off everyone. How's that?
So, sure, and we've discussed the whole concept of minimizing government, but the reality is that the ANC isn't going to do that, although the National Development Plan does have some things in it to make business more free, for example, to make employment more free and less constricted by bureaucracy and red tape. So,
Which
they created in the first place. But so that's the point I'm making, really, is that there are some good ideas in those structures.
Yeah, I remain unconvinced. I'm not going to trust the people who created the problems to sort them out.
So you just want to burn down Parliament?
No, not at all.
That noise, by the way, is Ramon and his e-cigarette.
No, I don't want to burn down Parliament at all. I don't believe in burning people for ideas.
The building. We can burn the building. Can be like Fees Must Fall, man.
It's a nice piece of architecture. It's part of our history. Maybe we may as well keep it. The people inside, though, that's a different thing entirely.
Get rid of them. Let them find proper gainful employment.
Yeah, and then we'll see how much power they actually have.
All right, so we both agree Zuma's not going anywhere. Doesn't matter what anyone says.
He'll remain till 2017 NEC elections, the ANC elections in 2017.
Do you think they might then, if he's not the president, recall him at that point? Because I heard an ANC person make the comment that, no, the Thabo Mbeki thing was different because he was no longer the president of the ANC. And therefore, because these idiots don't understand the separation of party and state, therefore, because he wasn't the president of the ANC, he no longer represented Luthuli House in a real sense. And so it was okay to recall him, and that's why that made sense. But recalling Zuma wouldn't.
No, right. But he only has two terms. I think the end of his two terms comes in 2017.
Yeah, as ANC president.
As ANC president. I mean, after that, I mean, we'll need to see who they put in his place. So far, it seems to be his ex-wife, which is a bit of a problem to me, because she will protect him, like she'll protect Baba.
Yeah.
As people like to call him. So, yeah, we're not going anywhere fast by any means.
Who would you like to see as that next person?
I can't give a shit. I really can't. They're all assholes.
Like, but you have to pick someone.
If I had to pick someone,
yeah,
I'll pick Fikile. He's like the Donald Trump of South Africa, without the success or hair or hot wife. I'll pick Fikile. He's out of clown. He belongs there.
So Fikile Mbalula as our next president, that's okay.
Amandla, yeah. As they say.
Charming. All right. So there's the anarchist in Ramon. The logical pragmatist on this side of the table would like to see probably of the people with a reasonable chance of actually winning that position. Probably I'd pick Cyril if I had to pick someone. Come, roll your eyes and tell us why.
What a yawn. Cyril?
Yeah.
What's so great about the guy? The arch crony
billionaire. Fikile's got no hope in hell. So, I mean, I could turn around and go, all right, well, if I was going to pick someone who's got no hope in hell, I'd pick Trevor Manuel, or I'd pick someone I believe who's got some good ideas and is really going to have a chance of doing something. But the reality is it's between Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma and Cyril Ramaphosa, and probably who's our third candidate at the moment?
No, I would suggest Jeff Radebe. He's very quiet at the moment.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll
He's married to Motsepe's sister, I believe. Mm. He's a Zulu. And he's been in government since 94. He holds a lot of power. He's never in public or whatever, but he holds a lot of power. Don't underestimate him.
Yeah, I mean, we can have this discussion about who we'd like. The reality is that it's not going to be any of our choices, but also that it's not going to make a difference, because remember, all of these people have stood by their man. So there's no reason to believe.
Yeah, but you think it's from loyalty. I think it's for pragmatic purposes. If they are going to take him out, they're going to do it internally. And they're certainly not going to tell the country beforehand.
And they're not going to let it seem like DA or an EFF victory.
The ANC is like a fucking cult, mate. Have you ever seen what they say? If there's issues, we go through the processes and all the stakeholders and all this other bullshit.
That's a typical any politician line,
But every single political party is like a cult, right? Everyone's like a cult member of these things. They never air their dirty laundry. If you do air your dirty laundry, you're out. So if they are going to play their hand, they're not going to do it publicly.
Okay. All right. So there you go. There's our opinion on Zuma and impeachment and the fact that he ain't going nowhere. I just want to thank some people we've had who've not sent us hate mail, not sent us death threats, but have been quite complimentary. Very frustrating. But
yeah, it's new to me. No one's ever complimented me online before.
Well, normally you're the 5:30 a.m. racist. So to Carl and Veinant. Thanks for your mails. Friedrich, thanks as well. Great mail from overseas. And then also Richard, who I think stumbled across us almost by mistake.
Yeah, by mistake. He was listening to another show at Cliff Central, the horrible socialist lefty show. Don't worry, Rory and Andrew, still love you. And he came across us and he found us far more compelling. And we'll just leave it at that.
All right, so thanks, guys. Thanks for your mails. It's nice to know what we're doing right and things you like, things you might not like as well. And then we've had some good feedback on Twitter. So we did ask you to sort of give us ideas on what you might want us to discuss. Today, obviously, no guests. We're just sort of shooting the breeze. And you gave us a whole bunch of ideas. Is black nationalism racist? Well, we're not 100% sure. We're gonna have some guests on in the coming shows who we'll sort of explore that with. I suppose once again, if we go back to the concept of collective, then you could argue that it is under the same reasoning. Previous guests have given. So Martin van Staden gave some really good compelling arguments against collectivism and against just this concept of black nationalism. So he calls Steve Biko a racist. On that basis.
Yeah, but I mean, even if it is or isn't racist, who gives a shit? What good is it asking that question in the first place? Is it just for, I don't know, point scoring? I'm not too sure.
Yeah, Well, I suppose it's maybe the person who asked it wants to kind of get to some understanding of people who are or aren't black nationalists and where they're coming from. But I mean, I tend to agree with you. It's what we said with regards to racism in terms of thought versus action. You know,
right.
So if you're racist in thought, yeah, and
yeah, I mean, I know a few people who are black nationalists. Yeah, great, mate. What must I do about it? Like, I don't really. If people could understand that the way you behave and not what you think is what counts. So if you're an arsehole, you're an arsehole. If you have these ideas in your head that somehow make sense to you, but aren't, you know, are deemed stupid or whatever, who cares? No one. It's how you behave. So, Andile. Yeah. I can never pronounce his surname.
Mfikama.
That one. I'm a foreigner.
And if I got that wrong, fuck you.
So he's a black nationalist. He's blocked me on Twitter. He's good friends with David Bullard because he said David Bullard is like a real racist and he's honest about it. So they're actually good friends. David Bullard and Nandile. Can you imagine?
On the basis that at least he's honest about his prejudice.
Yes, he's honest that you know, white people came and killed a lot of black people and colonialism existed, and so they get on quite well. Do you think Adelia is going to go to white people and kill them? No, I don't think so. Are your ideas stupid? Yeah, probably. Do I care? No.
I think people might be worried about the fact that maybe Adelia won't do it, but he can probably sort of, you know, motivate a crowd to potentially do something. And then you're going to argue, but the crowd's responsible.
No, but that's based on the premise that the people can't make, you know, ideas about their own beliefs up. So they need someone else to do it for them. Like, that's,
well, some that's people ridiculous. Do. Some people are like...
Oh, don't know, get me wrong. Most people are morons. You know, they think Carte Blanche is a true source of news on a Sunday. But no, like,
I love how we just insult everyone. It's fantastic. Because, I mean, if you live in Sandton and are listening to the show, you are deeply offended right now.
Where do we talk about Tashes?
All right, so...
Right, let's talk about the Panama Papers. Ooh, so you got a lot of tax avoiders making a huge fuss about other people who are avoiding tax.
Rich people put their money in tax havens. Huge news scoop, huge, massive.
Absolutely massive. So let's see, bears shit in the woods and rich people put their money offshore. I'm shocked. Absolutely fucking shocked.
Yeah, I'm also shocked. I'm also battling to see where the big thing is. I think those who are shocked and do find this thoroughly interesting are going to tell us, no, well, guys, come on, you know, these guys have avoided tax.
Good.
So Ramon thinks it's good. I can buy into the argument of, you know, the whole tax avoidance thing, only because if I have to pay tax, then so the fuck should they. But other than that, is it such a big thing? Am I surprised? No, not really. And if I'm honest, like Kulibusi, right?
Yes.
Kulibusi's put a whole bunch of money there. We don't even know whether he's paid tax on it or not, whether he's just put money there because South Africa is quite a shit place. I don't know if you've noticed, those of you with money, it's quite a shit place to have money right now. So he's been a clever businessman and he's put his money in Panama. Far as I can tell, the actual underlying sort of tone and subtext of the criticism of Kulibusi is, fuck you, you're rich, I'm jealous, and how dare you have money in Panama. That's kind of what I'm getting.
Yeah, I mean, poor people are looking at this all wrong. It's a story of aspiration. Just think, you work hard, your father becomes president, you work harder and you make money all of a sudden, and then you get to put it wherever you want in the world. That's pure aspiration. And you know, these poor people who are moaning and what I don't get, people who don't pay e-tolls, who use every single tax avoidance scheme, you know, legally in the country, who refused to, you know, pay more than what he's owed to the state. Now they're moaning about other people not doing the same thing, just on a bit of a larger scale because they have more money.
So arguably, if those people had the same opportunity to chuck their money in Panama, they would have.
Oh, please. You got people with money stashed in Mauritius yelling about Panama. Come on.
Yeah, so we don't think it's that big a thing. We aren't that interested, actually. And we couldn't care. There's that e-cigarette again. Basically, I'm getting e-cigarette cancer from Ramon. No, it's not a real thing. Calm the fuck down.
No, but basically, if you have a moralistic stance on how people use their money, you are the most lame socialist the world has ever known.
Yeah, and who said that?
Oh, Brendan O'Neill from Spiked Online. Go to it. Spiked-online.com, I believe. Great, great magazine.
Yeah, guys, if you're listening to this show, then you really need to listen to the sort of referrals we give, because a lot of, not what we say, because I would like to believe a lot of it is genuine and comes from us, but a lot of the ideas and a lot of the thinking, we listen to other people and we really pick up on some of the stuff that they're talking about.
Oh, to speak for yourself, I just read the Mail and Guardian. I'm like, oh, wow, this is my Bible. I learn everything from the Mail and Guardian.
Everything.
Absolutely everything.
Mail and Guardian is unbelievable.
Did you know Musi took leadership lessons from de Klerk?
I didn't know that.
The cheek. Can you believe it?
I thought that was disproven.
The fact that de Klerk would actually see a black man and teach him something.
I thought de Klerk was just completely bad. He didn't deserve that Nobel Prize.
I think it's a great story of another aspirational story about black and white coming together and learning something.
That would be bad because all whites are bad. Anyway, all right. I didn't say the second part of that, I suppose, because I don't believe either of it. What else have we got to kind of chat about? Ramon, we can't run out of things to talk about.
No, absolutely not. So should we go back to Rhodes Must Fall? I see they were out in full force this week, sexually molesting lesbians.
What happened with that? I didn't pay that much attention. I saw that they were doing something illegal. I was kind of like, oh, them again.
Well, who knows what it is. But somehow, Chimani Maxwele, who was the original Rhodes Must Fall instigator in the Cape, came up to Wits.
Yeah.
And then they started burning buildings and throwing things around and breaking stuff. And then apparently, I saw the story on Twitter, there was a lesbian woman, a black woman, who was actually sexually assaulted by him. There's photographic evidence for that.
And has he been arrested?
Not that I know of. But yeah, so you just see a bunch of entitled people who are, yeah, completely lawless, and hopefully
entitled? Are you sure you want to use that word?
Listen, if you can afford tertiary education for 15 years, you're fucking entitled. I don't care what you say. Chimani, you're like fucking 40 years old. You've been in university for 20 years. Get a fucking job. Please.
Wouldn't even say entitled. He's spoiled at that stage. We've dropped the F-bomb quite a few times on the show. Good thing we're uncensored.
For now.
Just something interesting I have heard around. So firstly, what you have to note is that Rhodes Must Fall was a separate structure to Fees Must Fall. They were not linked in any way whatsoever. Rhodes Must Fall was about removing a stupid statue at a Capetonian university. Fees Must Fall was about stopping a registration fee of 6,000 rand or something like that to register at Wits in first year, or any year for that matter. That's what the two movements were originally about. Now we've got them joining together, and some people are going, yeah, I liked Fees Must Fall originally, but now that it's political, I don't like it so much. So let me clear that up for you. You were basically fooled and were foolish in liking them in the first place, because Fees Must Fall never had anything to do with the fees, guys. You need to keep eyes on the prize. You need to stop reading Mail and Guardian as religiously as Ramon and any other sort of local paper, because unfortunately our journalists do not interrogate things as well as they should. So were there students who couldn't afford fees? Absolutely. Should those students have been helped, and should those students been able to study? Absolutely. No one disagrees on those basic principles. But you need to understand something about the structures at SRCs around this country, and I'll use Wits as an example because I know it well. The Wits SRC is a stepping stone to the ANC. There are many people who have done this. You can Google past Wits SRC presidents, and you will see that 70 to 80% of them in the last 20 years are now in government, or have been involved in government, or have been CEOs of governmental organizations, etc. It's very much a stepping stone, but the trick is this. You cannot be a law-abiding good student while you are on the WITS SRC and are in a leadership position there. Because if you are, you will not get noticed. So you need to do something to get noticed. You either need to burn down a library, as was done many years ago, 2007, 2008, I think, or you need to try assault other students with improvised weapons, as happened also several years ago. I think that was 2009, 2010. You just have to do something to stand out. So you have to understand that context of the SRC. The other thing you need to understand is that the outsourcing complaint that suddenly came up about 2 weeks into the Fees Must Fall, this had been a fight going on for years at WITS, because WITS had basically outsourced their cleaning staff, etc., to private companies. And so what had happened is the unions came along and said, no, 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 this will not do. So basically how it works is SRC says, look, what we'll do is we will get you, your staff, your unionized people back into the university. And therefore, when we want to shut down the university, you will help us. We scratch your back, you scratch ours. And so there's a lot more happening in terms of the political spectrum here than is just a poor student who can't afford to pay for university.
Jonathan, are you saying that the hashtag does not actually mean what the movement's about? I am flabbergasted.
Completely sure. It's fine. I don't mind them being sort of nefarious and lying about their motives. That's all okay. You would expect that from these types of organizations. That I understand.
No, but there's argument that they actually did not want an increase in their fees, right? And they got it from the state.
Yeah,
and then Fees Must Fall,
if that's what they really wanted, then surely they shouldn't exist anymore. Except they do, and they still have been complaining. And even though you don't necessarily hear about them on the news all the time, these guys are active all the time. I was at WITS the other day before this latest sort of violence broke out, and there was a guy standing at the office where people, the cashiers, where people pay their fees, and he was standing and just preaching, basically. EFF t-shirt on and preaching about the university and the management, and not saying very polite things, as you can imagine, which, fine, is freedom of speech to do. But understand that nothing went away because fees fell, and fees also didn't fall, really. What they did was they said, all right, we're not increasing fees for the current year, which basically has completely nobbed the university and the students studying there.
Well, do you know what's delicious? Have you gone through Adam Habib's Twitter timeline lately?
No.
He's responding to a lot of issues of students. So students are saying, oh, Mr. Habib, there's no Wi-Fi here, even though it says there are.
And he's saying budget cuts.
He says, we're fixing it. Look at how many complaints he's received lately about your services in the university.
So I can tell you, academic journals, the universities had to cut back on the scientific journals.
Yeah, but that's all white people's studies, man.
Yeah, it's colonial knowledge. I mean, we don't want that here. It's Western ideas.
Very dangerous. Very dangerous. This is Africa. We need African ideas. I'm still waiting to hear a solely African idea, to be honest, because – you know, ideas are
universal.
They're not based on your nation state, believe it or not. They're based on the people who originated them.
Yeah, it's
And if you don't want to, if you think Western ideas are so evil, then stop being a fucking Marxist, for God's sake. What do you think that's about? Do you think it was made in fucking Deep Kloof? No. It's made in Britain.
But as far as I, but you see, it's kind of like as soon as you cross into East Germany and beyond, then it's okay. If the ideas were kind of really pioneered in those areas, then it's, you know, if the Russians did it at some point, then it's okay. That seems to be a vibe.
Yeah, what? Are they like, I don't know, was Africanness like given to them through some means that we're not aware of? It is so odd. It's just some ideas though. So the New York Times cannot say, oh, Zuma must, you know, resign. But Marx can tell you how to run the fucking economy. And that's not, you know, that is not a subversion of the state. Like, people are morons.
Yes, they are, because they don't reason through things and they don't rationalize through things.
What do you mean they?
Well, you people. So some people asked us to, we discussed a fair amount on politics. That was part of what people said they wanted. You also wanted us to discuss a bit more about ourselves. Now, we're not sure really how to do that. So I'm sure telling you what I had for breakfast this morning and what I'm doing tonight is not interesting. So we imagine our ideas on things is what you really want to know about. And we don't mind giving you some of that, but the reality is this will all come out. I think if you listen to the first six shows, you'll know where I stand on a lot of things. You'll know where Ramon stands on a lot of things. Ramon, you want to contribute to more about yourself? I mean, what soap did you use this morning?
I can't remember. No, I'm an anarcho-capitalist, so I believe everything should be privatized. Nation state shouldn't exist. I believe in enclaves of people living in a city that are free to leave whenever they want to determine their own rules collectively.
No passports?
Well, you can have passports, but here's the thing. If you have no nations, it doesn't mean, you know, anarchism doesn't mean no rules. It means no rulers. So in an ideal situation, you would have a lot of different societies living together with their own rules, but you'll be free to leave one if you don't want to be there. So you can have a Marxist society. You can have a capitalist one. You can have whichever one you have, and they will be competing against each other all the time.
They just choose not to live there.
Due to trade. And yeah, if you don't want to live in the Marxist one, you don't have to. If you happen to be born there, you can leave if you want to. It's not like this nation state here where people say, oh, you're not a happy immigrant. Yeah, it's fucking expensive. And where must I go? Australia. Wow. Like what? Full of great white sharks and spiders and other ex-white, you know, white South Africans. Who the fuck wants to live there anyway? So, yeah, so I don't believe in states at all. I see the pragmatic reasons for it, but I do think that in, you know, a few centuries, we will look back and think, oh, the states, you know, it's like sort of like the slavery argument. It was very, very publicized, was worldwide, and then it was abolished, you know, within a few decades. The same thing is going to happen for states, I think.
So, I don't really have much against that argument. I think we might, in sort of centuries' time, be in a position where we don't have states and we look back on it and go, what the hell were they thinking? But, I mean, I stand at the moment, I don't have a problem with states. I think that they should be a lot smaller. So I take quite a libertarian view on that. I don't agree. See, this is the problem with labels, because if I say I'm a libertarian, then I'm a libertarian, but I don't agree with everything that libertarianism sort of stands for. So,
yeah, I think it's just important to just say what type of principles you believe in. I think that's more helpful to people rather than labels.
Yeah.
So I believe in absolute free speech. I believe in absolute freedom that doesn't harm others. I believe in legalization of drugs, prostitution, any conceptual thing you can think of. I believe in legalizing it.
Okay, so I'm a conservative on the show. In the sense that I suppose next to Ramon, I'm much more conservative. So I've said drug legalization. I'm in essence I'm okay with it, but I have a problem with the social problems that it can potentially cause. If you're in a position to compensate for those, then I'm fine with it. It's the same reason I agree. I believe in social nets to an extent. So I'm for capitalism, but I do understand states and sort of social welfare. I don't like the concept of the way we have it set up. We've discussed privately, something like a universal basic income. Principally, I like that idea more than I like the current social welfare. I don't think we've got a sustainable system in South Africa, you know, paying whatever many social grants. We've raised the point. Is it that much money? It's irrelevant. Everyone can agree it would be better to have less people on social welfare and more people kind of
more employed, obviously.
And earning their own money, doing whatever they want with it, doing whatever they want with their lives. I don't think anyone really wakes up in the morning wanting to just sit at home and do bugger all. That's the point. There are a few people who do actually wake up like that. In times of real economic prosperity in the first world or the developed world, you know, Germany's and your America's, Canada's, they always have unemployment because some people just want to be unemployed. So
yeah, sure.
That's understandable.
I mean, despite being an anarchist, I do see the fact that we live in a statist world. I mean, I do see practical outcomes of policy that we have, right?
Mm.
So what, you know, so, and we can see from precedent, from studies, from emulating other countries, studying those policies, we can see what works and what doesn't. You know, what doesn't work? Very, very rigid labor laws without a productive workforce. So in Germany, they got rigid labor laws. Yes, but they got a fucking highly developed workforce, right?
Mm.
Here we got all the regulations of the first world, and we're actually a third world country.
Yeah.
So we try to be like, we accede to international standards. Yeah, bullshit. We're not up to international standards. Our economy is bullshit.
I also think, you know, we've got a sort of trifecta, which is that sort of almost third world. We've got these sort of rigid labor laws, which can't kind of function in that environment. And then we've got the unions, who are very, very powerful here.
Well, they're politically connected, right?
Yeah. They control politics in many sense.
Yeah, but the
many senses.
Their membership is dropping, and all the only members are coming from the public sector. How can you have a public sector of 3 million people, and they're the ones that are most unionized?
Well,
who are they fighting against? They're their own bosses.
In my opinion, probably the single biggest indicator which points to a potential failed state, which is that we have a country which is now the public sector is, I think, the largest employer. So, you know, that is just not long-term sustainable.
No, of course not. All these people, you know, cost money, et cetera, et cetera. But, okay, well, on to other things. Like, what else do I believe in?
Let's talk about we haven't done it on the show. Let's talk a little bit about feminism. You know,
I'm a feminist.
Yeah, so I think I am too. But our
first wave,
yeah. So that's where we want to just explain to the listeners kind of the progression of feminism.
Right. Well, feminism started in the 19th century, and the big major contribution was the universal suffrage. So women got together and wanted to vote. You know, some of them said no, we don't care about voting, but a lot did, and they got the votes, and then that was essentially first wave feminism. And then, you know, there were a few other ones, especially during World War II, when the men left their jobs and women took over and they did a very good job. And they said, fine, now we want to work as well. We want to be treated under the law equally. And it was brilliant until then. And then you got like second wave with like
the 70s, 80s.
Yeah, burning bras and things are oppression if you're wearing a bra and all this other bullshit. And then today it's like, if you just look at a woman, it's rape and like it's bullshit.
So I think first and second wave feminism is, I don't have an issue with. I mean, I think second wave probably started, some of it bordered on the ridiculous, but the outcomes where we were, let's say in the year 2000, we had achieved feminism to a large extent in the West. And this is the other, we're going to get to the hypocrisy of third-wave feminism.
There's no need for feminism in the West anymore.
So women are essentially equal. They are treated as equal to men.
Well, they're doing a lot better. They've got far more degrees. They're graduating far, far more than men.
They get murdered less often.
They get all sorts of benefits. They get less jobs, less shitty jobs. They don't get killed on the job.
This is all fact, by the way. There are statistics to support this.
Right. So, I mean, if you're in the West, I mean, as a feminist, basically, you're like an unemployed socialist, so you need to write about your depression because some man on the train had his legs open a bit too wide for you.
Yeah. So this is third-wave feminism. Third-wave feminism says we have a rape culture when we don't. And please, I'm not saying we, for example, in South Africa don't have a rape problem. We do.
Yeah, but we're not a first world country.
So
we're talking about the West.
So we're talking about the West. I would argue, you know, South Africa is kind of split in some ways because if you take just our middle class, we're very much a first world country.
Yes.
And amongst that group, we don't have a rape culture. It's very simple. There's these myths being perpetuated about how women are constantly in the West under threat from men looking at them as a violent action, touching them is rape, pretty much. There are sort of prominent feminists, third wave feminists in the world who are arguing that, you know, if a man touches you, that is rape.
Yeah, but what it is now, third wave feminism is socialism with panties. They just want the state to come and intervene and to give all sorts of benefits to women only. And as a cisgendered white male, your opinion shouldn't really count because you have privilege, etc., etc. They just want the big state to come in and give them benefits to people who don't really have them. They're already equal under the law, for fuck's sake.
So, you see, I don't even see it that way because I don't – what do they want exactly? I mean, for example, the wage gap, it doesn't exist. So, you know, this argument about the wage gap, it's been disproven. The whole $1 to 77 cents, it doesn't exist. Yes, if you take a woman – who takes 4 years of work in a 30-year period and a man who doesn't, and then you work out what they earned in 30 years, it's obvious that the person who worked for 4 years less is going to have earned less than the guy who – the person who worked
Yeah, but women make different choices to men. They don't – they prefer to work part-time. They prefer to have families. They prefer to
– And some do and some don't. And yeah. those who don't make those choices
earn
more than men or earn the same as men. So the wage gap is absolute nonsense. I mean, what do you think they want the law to change to? I don't understand. You know, men to be put in concentration camps? What is the...
Well, one well-known one did say that. They should put all men in on an island.
Yeah.
Her name's Julie Bindle. I don't know if she was actually being serious because she's actually quite fun on Twitter. She said, no, put all men on the island. We'll bring, you know, a few over. They can, you know, impregnate us. Then we'll put them back there. Like, it was a bit of a weird dystopian article I read. But no, it's a bunch of people who have unlimited victimhood, who are very, you know, unhappy with who they are. So they're looking for salvation through the state.
And most importantly to me, they don't give a shit about the women who are actually being mistreated, where first wave feminism hasn't even reached, you know, in sort of pretty much anywhere east of Europe.
I'll tell you a little story. So Anita Sarkeesian is a well-known feminist. Her shtick is that, you know, video games cause violence. Mm. So she, you know, she went to Kickstarter. She got $200,000, I believe, to make videos.
It wouldn't have mattered. If it was $5,000, it was ridiculous.
No, well, she asked for $6,000, that she got like 60 or 70 or 100, somewhere around there, to make five videos. She made three of them over the course of 2 years. Now, she's asked for an extra $200,000 to make videos on good, you know, women in the historical context, on female pirates and who knows what else. Yeah, great. Then you have someone called the Amazing Atheist. He's this curmudgeonly atheist guy on YouTube. And he says, I'll run a Kickstarter, $200,000. All proceeds will go to Syrian women, Syrian refugees.
Okay, that sounds noble.
Yeah. But obviously feminists don't give to him because he's a misogynist bastard and he's white, etc., etc. He has raised half the money Anita has. So Anita is doing videos and she gets funded. He gives money to Syrian female refugees and he doesn't get funded. How is that for irony?
And that's the whole problem. It's a great example, and we know that, you know, we're complaining about man spreading, which is literally men spreading their legs. You know, it's how you sit is now sexist. When, you know, women are being beaten or being killed,
they're sex slaves.
Well, not only that. I mean, in you know, you take some of the. The countries, Saudi Arabia as an example, you sleep with another man who happens not to be your husband. I think we can all agree that that's an act between two adults. So, you know, in some cases, it's not even the case because of the power sort of structure in that country. If a man wants to sleep with you, you don't get to say no. So a man rapes you but he's not your husband. You're the one who gets punished.
Right.
It's completely, but no one in sort of feminism is raising these sort of issues.
And the ones who aren't getting, you know, acknowledged or publicized. But back to South Africa, if you're a feminist and you're not talking about the bigotry and hate crimes against gays and lesbians in townships and rural areas, you cannot be a feminist. I'm sorry to say. You cannot at all. That is probably the biggest form of discrimination that we face that is leading to actual murder.
and no one said actual anything. Murder, actual violence, actual hate crimes. I've seen it. I've seen it myself. I've treated the victims.
Yeah, so, I can imagine. And it's a crime of pure hate. There's nothing else there where they slash, you know, genitals with bottles and whatever. It's pure hate.
And in the rest of Africa, we've got a huge female genital mutilation problem.
Yeah.
Which is basically from the same bullshit.
Yeah, but it's their culture, Jonathan. Don't dare you criticize the fucking culture.
Yeah, it's about time we started getting rid of bad ideas in cultures and basically reforming those cultures.
That's a separate argument entirely altogether. But nevertheless, so, I mean, you can see every few episodes, we're going to take a solo episode, just Jonathan and I, and I hope you can see what sort of, you know, how we think and what ideas we have. I mean, we will give you more resources in the future about books we're reading or documentaries we're watching. But I hope you get to know us a bit more during the course of this hour. And thank you so much for listening.
So thanks, guys. We really appreciate the support. We're going to continue the show. More mails, renegadereportmailbox@gmail.com. Obviously, Ramon on Twitter, it's spelled @RomanKavanek. Myself @Jonathan_Witt. And our Facebook page for the Renegade Reports, you can just search for us. Please like the page. We post good stuff up on there. And then Twitter, it's @Renegade_Reports. We're quite active. We'll reply to you. And we really appreciate all your involvement. So until the next one, we're going to call it a day. I'm going to put my radio voice back on. Thank you so much, and goodbye.
Cliffcentral.com.